I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
We welcome in, as we do in the 8 o'clock hour every week, we welcome in our good friend, voice of the Texans, Mark Vandermeer. Mark, you didn't have to pay a big, huge dollar amount to get into to your school, but to get into BU back in the day, did you?
No, but now I would because it's ridiculously expensive. I mean, I don't know how people afford this stuff. It's crazy. And the Lori Loughlin stuff, what was it, $500,000 you said?
$500,000.
First of all, that's not a big donation to USC. Not big enough to get a kid in, I don't think. Yeah. I think you got to go at least seven figures, maybe eight, you know, to think about that kind of thing. And it, you know, USC is a good school, but really a half mil for USC, was it that important to the family to get her in? For USC, I could see Ivy League maybe because that's kind of a ticket, you know, but USC?
Yeah.
Why?
Is USC, because my guess is the only reason you do that as a parent, especially if you know your kids, and apparently her kids, at least one of them had no desire to go to school. My guess is you're doing that so that when you're bouncing around to the Hollywood parties, you can kind of wear it on your sleeve that your kid goes to the school. And maybe in Hollywood, USC carries that kind of cachet, you know, in that area. But yeah, that you're right. It seems like an odd place to – that seems like an odd hill to die on, Mark, paying to get into USC and then going to jail.
We've all felt the desire to help our children in certain situations. I mean, I understand the vibe. I can kind of feel it a little bit at times, like, ooh, he really needs a little push here. But I'd rather have him do the pushing than me do the pushing.
Right,
you know?
Right.
You teach a man to fish. That's how you educate. At least that's my word, and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah. Those days are coming up for you pretty soon, Mark.
Well, I mean, look, we're going into high school here. Yeah. This, I mean, he's done, eighth grade graduation is tonight. This is a big deal. I guess it is.
Is it virtual?
No, they're actually, he goes to St. Lawrence and Sugarland. They're actually doing a thing. They're doing a thing.
Okay.
Where, because they can go 25% capacity, and it's a huge church. So you can fit 400 people in there. That's like 25%. So that's pretty good. But I think we got to mask up and everything. So it's going to, you know, you're going to look back at the photos and say, remember that?
Yeah.
I hope we say that.
Right. I was up in Nacogdoches on Sunday morning, and I drove past a church service where it looked like what they were doing was they had a stage set up outside in front of the church, and it looked like everybody was pulling up like at a drive-in movie. Mm. And they were parking there with their windows open and everything.
Great.
Yeah, I wanted to stop and take pictures or what have you, but then I felt kind of weird.
I wonder if it was a drive-through communion.
You know,
pull up and they roll down the window? You know, little body of Christ to go?
It wasn't like a drive-through window. They were actually like parked and like sitting there like in the gallery. Like at a drive-in movie where you'd sit and they were going to watch him give his service out on the...
I see.
I wanted to watch and see for a little bit, but then I thought it would be really conspicuous when my diesel deceptively fast van cranked up after 5 minutes.
Yes.
Like, I've seen enough.
So I'm old enough to remember drive-in movie theaters, right? Mm-hmm. And the really old kind, you had to bring the speaker in, which is not good for coronavirus, right? Yeah. When you bring the speaker into the car. But the little 1-watt transmitter they have where you tune in on like 88.7 or something, boom, you're good to go.
Hey, Mark, have you seen, I don't know, have you ever been to the rooftop cinema here in town?
No, I have not been to the rooftop.
It's the rooftop cinema, and it's on top of a building in Post Oak, okay?
Right.
And they have a big movie screen, and you sit outside, and you watch a movie outside on the roof of a building, and it's really, really good. And they have a bar and so forth. The same company that's doing that, Amy and I are going tonight, actually, and we went like a week ago. They are, you know those silos over by Washington and Sawyer Heights over there, like in that warehouse district?
Uh-huh.
They are doing, rooftop cinema people are shooting drive-in movies onto the side of the silos, and you park in the field there next to it. And you can bring a cooler. We're going to see Back to the Future tonight.
Oh, perfect.
We saw Grease last week. We're going to see Mean Girls on Tuesday.
Oh, man. You know, you two always get out about town, like the empty nest, the whole thing.
Yes.
Listen, I got a 7-year-old, okay? Ball and chain as far as doing that kind of stuff goes. No, we still have the fun stuff.
They
I'm
might
sure
like Back
that.
To the Future at the drive-in, though.
Actually,
you know?
Yes, you're right.
I'll send you the link.
Your 7-year-old knows how to operate a microwave and call 911. Yeah, they've got everything they need in life. Yeah.
He's fine. He can play Minecraft. He created New York City on Minecraft. I'm like, how the hell do you do this?
Did he really?
Yes.
Oh, that's wild.
I mean, it didn't look perfect, okay? Yeah. It was a kind of crude version, but hey, not
still,
bad.
Yeah. That's not bad. We used to have to build it in Legos, you know, and now he's doing it on a Minecraft.
Well, I don't mind that video game actually for him. You know, we have a little some household debates about it, but I think it's pretty cool.
What do you do on do you blow stuff up? What's the deal? Is it Minecraft?
Minecraft? No, you build things, Seth. It's really cool. It's
Why is it
very
called Minecraft? I always thought it was a war thing.
You're mining, and there's like you get tools, and there's sheep, and there's some sinister elements to it too. It's too much to explain.
You may be thinking of World of Warcraft.
I just heard Minecraft, and I thought for sure it was like mines somehow. That's
like landmines blowing things up.
Trust me, I'm not thinking of anything. Like, I don't know what World of Warcraft is about or anything.
Okay.
Minecraft sounds like there's mines involved.
Fair enough. So, Mark, what did you think of Tim Kelly earlier this week?
You know, I thought it was interesting because we've heard from him before, but now you're hearing from him for the first time as a play caller, and that was really cool because we're all wondering what it's going to look like. Is it going to look different? It's going to look different because what you have here is new personnel for him to work with, and there are a couple of things that stood out to me. First of all, we've talked about it. You have this new arsenal of receivers, really, with Fuller and Stills. Yes, they're the holdovers, but what are Cooks and Cobb going to look like in the lineup? I think one of the more underrated things about this offseason as far as the national narrative on the Texans, and not so much locally, but maybe a little bit to some, is the fact that you have an offensive line. And we've talked about this, how great it is to have these guys coming back. And he did talk a bunch about that, how this offensive line, the difference they can make now that they spent a year together offseason. I think with OTAs, you're not really – I don't want to say you're not missing much. You're definitely missing some stuff in OTAs. But we always talk about how, well, you're not going to know about the O-line until training camp gets started because that's when they can start hitting. Well, it's true, right? So let's wait for training camp to see what they really look like. But it's good that they've had time under their belts. And Kelly has a lot to work with here. So I'm eager to see the offensive design once they get going, like everybody else is. And I think that the receiving crew, the fact that it's an ensemble, it's going to be interesting for Watson. You know, who's his go-to guy? I think it's going to be different guys in different situations, and it's going to be fun to watch.
Do you think, I guess if you had to handicap it, what's the percentage chance that there's a notable trade before September with the Houston Texans?
I think that in any normal situation, notable trade, meaning at least like Duke Johnson for a third-rounder kind of trade.
Or
that
a
level.
Starter. Somebody, I guess, trading for a starter. Or, trading a higher draft pick, a third round plus draft pick.
I would say the chances are, because it's Bill O'Brien, I can't even pinpoint what it would be, but I would say the chances are certainly reasonable because, you know, he makes moves. I mean, we've seen it. Now, I don't know what they'll determine to be their level of need. I hesitate to use the word desperation because I think, like, they were feeling not desperate, but, man, we're really down at running back. I mean, here we are. Deontay Foreman did not turn out to be who we hoped he would be for us. And then when Lamar Miller goes down, you are kind of desperate. You know, you definitely need to shore up that position group. So they made that move for Carlos Hyde after already making the move for Duke Johnson. And at tackle, they looked at the situation and said, we've got to get a left tackle. Look, if we're going to go anywhere, you know, we could be – I think, look, they might have been reasonable if Howard plays left tackle and stays healthy all year. And that might have been a reasonable thing. Look, they won 11 games, Julian Davenport and whoever else they threw into the mix in 2018. But they felt like if we're going to really do something, we got to get a left tackle, and they did. So they might feel that way at certain position groups. So they might think that, hey, once they get a good look at Isaiah Coulter, maybe QT suddenly rises up from the ashes here. I don't want to say ashes, but I guess I just did. Maybe they feel like they can trade one of the receivers. You know, maybe that's a situation that they'll explore. There are a lot of different options.
That is an aspect of this potential training camp, whatever it ends up looking like, that maybe ends up bothering Bill O'Brien more than a lot of coaches just because Bill seems to be he's got an itchy trigger finger on these trades. And you're exactly right. Isaiah Coulter, if he comes in and impresses, and this is a small college guy that has potentially extreme physical skill, if O'Brien really likes what he sees, like in a normal training camp, then maybe all of a sudden you do start looking at trading away one of your other active wide receivers. But you're not gonna, you're potentially not gonna get that opportunity if training camp is cut back.
Yeah, I just think that in kind of in response to Seth's previous question, I don't know that they're left with the ammunition to make a big deal anymore. You know what I mean? Like they traded the two first round picks and the second round pick next year. They traded Clowney. They traded Hopkins. The rest of the big money ammo that they have potentially in a trade like that are all guys that they've either just signed, Laremy Tunsil, or are trying to sign, obviously, Deshaun Watson or J.J. Watt, who I don't think there's any chance that they move J.J. Watt in a deal like that.
Well, that's why I said Duke Johnson for a third rounder kind
of
notable.
Yeah, maybe
or
that level.
Even like Hyde was for Martinez Rankin, who was probably going to get cut. And if I told you before that deal, hey, they're going to trade Martinez Rankin for somebody who's going to rush for 1,000 yards, you'd say, really? That sounds pretty good to me. And it was pretty good for them. It all worked out for that year. And now, you know, like Bill O'Brien says, every year is different. Well, he's proven that because you're going in with a very different looking backfield. You know, Duke was there last year, but, you know, how many carries is he going to get versus David Johnson? How many carries does David Johnson ultimately get? What does he ultimately do for this offense? We don't know. And that's a position group that I'm looking at because don't you have to get a little deeper there? Unless you love these rookies or you love Higdon coming back or whatever, don't you have to get a little bit deeper or at least feel good about your depth? And maybe they do feel good about their depth, but that's one I'm going to watch carefully throughout training camp.
All right, that's Mark Vandermeer. He's always joining us in the 8 o'clock hour on Fridays. We just talked about some of the potential rule changes. We'll get Mark's thoughts on that. Is there anything he would add to the list for the owners to vote on next week when it comes to the rules? We'll get to that next. Payne Pendergast and Mark Vandermeer joining us for his Friday visit. Hey, Mark, have you seen Ryan Fitzpatrick's hair?
I've not seen the new version. I'm going to look it up right now.
He's got basically a gigantic pompadour to go along with his huge caveman beard that he has.
Well, look, the beard is legendary, okay? You know, a lot of guys have grown corona beards, all right? COVID beards during this mini era we're in. But Fitzy's always been the legend. And he might have been the best quarterback interview ever in the history of the franchise, really. We did a show with him once. He was so great. We had a show called Texans Late Night for 2 years. And we had some fun moments. It was kind of a crude set. It looked like somebody's basement. But Fitzy was maybe the best guest we ever had on that show. He is so wonderful with the media. And I salute him. 2005 he was drafted, and he's still in the National Football League. It's a good thing.
I did a quick fact check of your best quarterback interviews ever. Okay. And I'm trying to find, of starting NFL quarterbacks, in the running, would it have to possibly be Sage Rosenfels?
He's Case, great. Look, Case he's great Keenum. Now. Yeah, very good. Especially with, like, for some reason, he and Drew really hit it off. They got along great. I think
Case and Drew
age.
Did?
No, not quite. Drew
Doherty is who you're
talking about.
To.
Drew Doherty and Case?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. They had great chemistry.
It sounds like you're
interviews.
A little jealous, frankly.
Man,
it sounds like maybe you had better chemistry with Fitzpatrick.
No, me and Schaub were tight. No, not tight. But no, actually, you know, I worked with Matt on his charity gala and everything. And I really enjoyed, you know, spending time around the Schaubs. But Fitzy, as far as just fun, content, all of it. I mean, he's just he was thrilling to thrilling, bad word, but interesting to talk to. Put it that way.
Yeah.
Compelling.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, go. His hair is very compelling now. So go find that. So Mark, Seth and I were just talking about some of the rule changes that are being proposed. Are you a fan of this 4th and 15 in place of an onside kick?
Forget it. It's stupid. Let's not do this.
Whoa.
Let's not.
Whoa.
No, this is a bad rule.
Wait, why?
Folks.
Why?
Yeah, this is not good.
But the current onside kick has turned into a travesty.
All right, so I've got a lead, right? And I'm trying to close out a game, but somebody backdoors me and gets like a couple of touchdowns, and all of a sudden they're within a score, and I'm going to give the ball back to Patrick Mahomes at the 25-yard line. He's got a chance to convert. I mean, that's not exactly a high-percentage play. I get it, a 15-yard one-shot deal, but I don't want that. Now, if I'm trailing, I guess, yeah, I do want that, but it just seems ridiculous to give the offense the ball back without – you know, you get a snap, you got to do something else to get that snap. The onside kick, I know it's flawed, and I am here to say I don't have a better solution for it right now because maybe football, we've outgrown the onside kick. Maybe we've outgrown the Oklahoma drill. We've outgrown a few things in football, and the onside kick is one of them. But I don't like that fourth and 15. That's just 15 yards.
It does.
It's a little short for me. Like fourth and 20, 25 or something? I don't know. I mean, the percentage conversion on that is going to be way higher than an onside kick, I would think.
That's the idea, I think, is to keep the game hanging in the balance.
Well, I think the difference is, and this is where I'm agreeing with you, Vandy. I think no matter how good your kicker is, no matter how awesome he is at onside kicks, there's still a whole lot of luck involved into actually converting it. With this, you're right. The teams that have a Pat Mahomes or a really, really good offense, that almost seems like an unfair advantage that they have over turning something that is kind of a crapshoot, no matter how good you are, to now all of a sudden, yes, the team that has the better quarterback has even one more advantage now.
Yeah, they get another snap, and it's only 15 yards. You can get a flag. You could get defensive holding. Oh, 5-yard penalty and an automatic first down, and we're still rolling here against a gassed defense. I mean, a defense that is totally out of fuel at that point because Mahomes just scored 2 fourth-quarter touchdowns when they were down 3 scores. I'm bringing up Mahomes' name in this, of course, because if you're facing Ryan Fitzpatrick, it might not work out. But I don't know. It feels a little cheap to me. Look, I'll take it. Obviously, I have to take whatever they put out there. I mean, there have been a number of rules I haven't liked over the years, but that's one of them.
Mark, here's how you got to look at it. Because you're taking a defeatist view of this because you keep bringing up Mahomes, and it almost feels like you put yourself in a place where the Texans are going to get victimized by this.
That's true. Like, you're facing Mahomes every week.
Every week.
Yeah.
Mark, the Texans have Deshaun Watson.
I know,
this is
going to
benefit the Texans more often than not.
Yeah, it does keep people hanging in there, there's no doubt. Because how many games do you watch where, you know, you are down a couple of scores, and it's not a reasonable thing to kick off, and you know you don't have enough timeouts to make stops, so you're just praying that the onside kick comes through, and it's such a long shot prayer, really. I mean, what is the conversion rate on an onside kick now?
It's down to like 5%.
No, it's a little over 10%. It's like
10%.
It's like 10.7% is what they say.
Hey, roll the dice, baby. 10%. So 4th and 15. I'm guessing 4th and 15, but it's all going to depend on the quarterback. You can't take league wide statistics because you have to really look within on that number.
Yeah. Well, plus all those stats also, if you're including, okay, desperation plays at the end of a game where you're down by 14, of course you're going to convert that.
Yeah.
That conversion percentage for 4th and 15, it's going to be lower on these onside attempts.
Yeah, they're just trying to keep eyeballs on the game for as long as possible. It's all about ratings. And Mark, in the midst of the pandemic, you know, if you got to keep those ratings up for as long as you can, you know?
Well, the ratings are going to be great. I mean, look, they could show football, you know, play it in the practice bubble at the Houston Methodist Training Center. It's going to get a huge number, right?
Yeah.
We might have to. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Please.
That would
don't.
Be something.
Yes.
Playing the bubble.
I've often thought going to practice, like, what would it be like to actually have a game in here? I might find out. No, they wouldn't play there, obviously.
No.
But it's going to be weird. You know, I talked to McClain last night. I know you guys talk to him once a week.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I talk to him, I want to, you know, pretty much light myself on fire because he's so negative about it. Well, there's no way they're going to play all the preseason games. And how are they going to do this? And how are they going to do that? No, I love John. But, you know, he brings up
That is what he's saying, though, pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, he brings up some good points. And I'm thinking, oh, please come up with a solution. You know, we need a breakthrough here. And now it's May 22nd. They play August 14th. Is there some breakthrough we can have in the next month and a half that's going to allow us to have fans in the building and the full-fledged experience?
The full-fledged experience, yeah.
I think
the NFL, as careful as they are about a lot of PR things, I think they're really hoping that some other league tries that pretty soon so they can start to have a response to it and figure out, okay, what works, what doesn't work. They don't want to be the canaries in the coal mine, I think, that just goes out there and just tries having 50% occupancy all of a sudden.
Yeah. People were watching Bundesliga like it's the NFL playoffs, okay, last weekend.
Yeah.
It was like, what is this? Ooh, wow. I've never watched that soccer league before, to my knowledge anyway. I've watched some Premier League stuff. But it was like very hollow sounding in the stadium. I think the league would go with, and we've talked about this a little bit, I think they're going to go with stadium sound if need be. If that is the way it's going to go down, if no fans can get in, they'll just pump up the sound in the stadium.
Will they have somebody, like an impartial observer, that's supposed to just try to keep up the same decibel levels of like a home game experience when the opposing team's offense is out on the field?
I'm wondering, and I would doubt it would be the full volume.
So yeah.
I just think it'll be something just for some noise, some, you know, some atmosphere in there, you know? I mean, the players would want it too. Who said it? You didn't realize, I think it was one of the Bundesliga players or something, that they thought it would be the same until they scored, you know, and then...
The celebrations were weird.
Yes.
Did you see, like, they didn't... They
can't
stood,
touch each other.
They stood 6 feet from each other and just started dancing.
Well, how about... You saw the benches, right? Everybody 6 feet apart.
Yeah.
All right, so that's okay. But when you're playing soccer, you know, you're less than 6 feet apart much of the time, right?
Yeah.
And in football, last I checked, you're definitely not 6 feet apart. You're doing it wrong if you're 6 feet apart. So I'm not sure how that's going to go down. The mesh masks, whatever they put in place.
Yeah, have you seen any of these prototypes from supposedly Oakley is working on something where they could have a full coverage visor? With medical grade stuff in it.
We've seen stuff like this, you know, and I think that we haven't seen the whole thing, but there's probably something they could do. Are you going to get enough air? Do you have to pump air? I don't know. I don't know how that's all going to work. And then, you know, everybody's wearing gloves pretty much, except for the quarterback and, you know, some of the other guys. Seth, did you wear gloves when you played D-line?
Yeah, I think almost everybody does these days.
Yeah. It's protection. It's like you got to feel naked without gloves out
yeah,
there.
It's also, yeah, you. Well, I didn't used to, and then... You it's protective for your fingers, not just from like scrapes and stuff, from actually like getting dislocations and breaking. Like it's an extra little bit of give.
Well, how would you feel playing with a big visor on your face?
I would get really, really hot, and that's why Oakley. This was interesting. Sean brought it up when we first talked about it. It's like it seems like it would steam up, right, with a full visor.
Yeah.
Oakley, because they work with the military, has experience with. In very important situations, they don't want people's masks clouding up. Like, oh my gosh.
Like week one of the regular season.
Well, in the military, it's like, hey, oh my gosh, it's hot in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Yes. Never would have guessed it. Yeah. Let's not have our visors.
We're trying to find Bin Laden, and oh my gosh, my mask is fogging up.
Which I'm kind of looking forward to if they've got some kind of, wait, how do I pronounce this? Boba Fett?
It's Boba Fett.
I said Boba Fett the other day.
He called him Bubba Fett the other day, and I'm like, that's the redneck version of Boba Fett.
I want to see Bubba Fett out there.
Bubba Fett.
Which is, you know, most offensive linemen with like a full coverage mask. That'd be badass.
I'm in for designer masks for sure, yeah.
It could look really badass and cool. Like, it could be something they keep forever.
It could be
post-COVID.
Something they sell, Mark. That's the NFL.
Ooh,
it could be something they sell in the... In the team store, the version of the helmet with the Boba Fett mask on it.
No question. And then you're going to donate your mask at the end of the game. Oh, wait a minute. It's got COVID on it. Don't do that. Sorry.
No, you know, you get tested.
We'll steam it.
Mark, what do you think the odds are that you have the antibodies?
That I have the antibodies?
Yeah.
I haven't had any kind of like, you know, I haven't felt bad. There was one morning like a few weeks ago where I felt like I was kind of run down and I thought like, do I have shortness of breath? Mm. You know, we all get paranoid. And then like it was gone by 10 a.m. But you never know. I don't know. But look, my brother swears he had it. He works at an office where they all travel all around the world. He's in Silicon Valley. He said, oh, yeah, we all had it.
Yeah.
And I've got another brother in England who is dead sure that he had it with his wife. All the classic symptoms. I'm like, you guys get tested? Nah. I'm like, all right, great. You know, how many people are there like that?
Only 0.7% of baseball had the antibodies.
Yeah.
Like, and that's a group that I think, like MLB employees. So I'd imagine travel pretty well. And, you know, it's just like that. That was a surprisingly low number.
It was a low number. Yeah. Mark, what do you think the odds are that I have the antibodies considering I went to Disneyland for 2 days in March?
Yeah, I'm amazed you're still alive.
I haven't had any symptoms, but I feel like there's at least a 50-50 shot I got the antibodies.
50-50? What?
I'm just throwing it out there.
I don't know. Well, you might have been exposed to something, but maybe didn't get it.
My body repelled it.
It's hilarious, Mark, because anybody that's had a common cold in the last 6 months is convinced
I've had it.
That they had the,
Oh, no, I'm just convinced I had it based on where I went.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
I went to the grimiest place on Earth, Disneyland.
If you have had it, the chances are that you didn't have the symptoms at all, so you wouldn't even know it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I feel like anybody that's had any kind of a sniffle or anything feels like, oh, I definitely had it way back. I had it in July of 2017.
How about this? I had to cough in a store the other day, and it was like a reflux cough, like something coming up. And I was like, oh, no. You know, it did it in my elbow, and I thought the alarms are going to go off like, seize him.
You're going to show up like one of these aggressive Karens on Facebook. Like, look at this guy intentionally coughing on people.
I had to sneeze yesterday. You think a cough is bad?
Oh,
I mean, a sneeze.
I don't even sneeze on Zoom. I'm afraid people are going to be like, Zoom sneeze.
All right. There's going to be a documentary coming out about Tom Brady. I want to ask Mark Vandermeer if they were to make a multi-part documentary about a single Texan season, and we'll see, he's probably got a few of them in the holster, but what Texan season would be the most compelling for Texan fans or overall to make a multi-part documentary about? We'll ask the man who has done play-by-play for every game of every one of those seasons next. So the big news in terms of content generation today is that ESPN is going to be working collaboratively with Tom Brady on a 9-part documentary, I would assume with a lot of similar characteristics to what we just saw in the Last Dance. Mark Vandermeer joined Seth and I for his weekly visit here in the 8 o'clock hour. Mark, what was your overall grade for the Last Dance, and what's your likelihood of consuming all 9 episodes of the Brady doc?
I definitely watch the Brady documentary, even if it's not quite as good. I would love him to do it when he retires. I think he'll speak more freely, perhaps. And, you know, Jordan, a lot of waters gone under the bridge since he played, of course. And I think the whole thing was done with this edge of showing the millennials how he is the GOAT and not LeBron. And, you know, they don't go into that much, but I think that was a big part of the point of all this, is not only to have this as entertainment and information for a lot of people who might not remember or just want to relive those moments, it's also just to send a message. Because it felt sort of, it doesn't feel current, but the vibe feels current. Like, Jordan was great. Sometimes we forget how great he was. I don't want to have the debate who's the greatest player of all time right now. Maybe you guys do, but the thing, and I'm sure you have.
No, that's okay.
Yeah, it's like, no, we're good. We're good.
It's Bill Walton.
Yeah, it is. It's Bill. It's Robert Parrish, actually.
Chief.
I think he was the best. But anyway, and it, you know, all that stuff is so tantalizing. I thought it was great. I gave it an A. I mean, I loved watching it and going back and forth. It was a little weird when you were in the 98 playoffs and going back to the 97 playoffs.
Yeah, they kept jumping back and forth, doing that thing where, they made it a little too much like a movie that tries too hard with all the flashbacks and everything.
But they nailed it with Kerr, because when they go back in time and tell Kerr's story, and then they come back to the present in the film context, and then they have the shot of Kerr, and then they pan over to Michael in the moment there prior to a game, that was really powerful. During the national anthem, that was really powerful stuff. Excellent filmmaking. They're going to win about a gazillion Emmys.
Yeah. I wonder how many people still hadn't heard the story about Steve Kerr's father being murdered when he was in college.
You're probably right.
That's the most in-depth I'd seen on it. I've read about it before, but that's the first time I've really seen any actual video on it. I'm sure there's a bunch out there that I've just missed. But,
and how big a national story it was.
Yeah.
Because they showed the footage of NBC Nightly News. They showed some big wheels talking about that.
Right.
Yeah.
And I felt like there were certain little nuggets about it. Some of the Rodman stuff, you know, the vacation he took in the middle of the playoffs.
Yeah, I didn't know about that.
That stuff was pretty cool. I wonder if, like many other things that are happening during the pandemic that might continue after the pandemic, do you think the fact that Jordan's documentary is getting 5 million viewers every episode they put up, which is breaking all kinds of records for ESPN, do you think they feel like, okay, we're not going to get these same numbers after the pandemic is over, but there might be more of a market for this than a lot of the other stuff we're putting on, like mid-major type basketball games and everything, that a lot of these really super long documentaries about super famous people, we might see more of this in the future.
The numbers were ridiculous, right? And think about what they paid for this, or what they're going to pay for the Brady series versus what you pay for live sports, right? Mm-hmm. These are mega live sports numbers with huge rights fees involved just to get those numbers. Now, you're right. They're not going to get the same numbers because you'll be competing against the NBA playoffs and whatever they're running Sunday night and Major League Baseball and competing against yourself in some cases. But they'll find the perfect night to put it on. Maybe it is Sunday. Maybe it's another night. I mean, this was must-see TV. Yes, no live sports, but I think a Brady documentary series is going to get a huge rating. I mean, this is going to be amazing. And do it in the off-season, the proper time of year. Now, remember, they wanted to air this in July, which is a pretty dead month other than Major League Baseball. So maybe they'll air the Brady series that, you know, goes through June and July. I don't know how they'll do it. I don't know what their target is. But it's going to be, you know, it'll be very watchable. I mean, it's Brady. It's
I am all about the potential Giselle Bridget Moynihan drama.
Ooh, are we going to get
see,
that?
I need to see some of that.
That's
some
problem.
Giselle seems like the kind that could, like, kind of casually dismiss somebody with the fire of a thousand burning suns somehow. Whereas I feel like Bridget Moynihan feels like more wholesome, and probably she was the first. She's always got that I hit it first. You know, she can always pull that out of there first. Yeah.
True. I love Bridget Moynihan. Yeah. Wait, what's the show with her and Tom Selleck and Donnie Wahlberg and the come on, you know, the crime drama show?
Yeah,
on CBS.
I
don't know. The family thing. I don't know.
All in the family.
The show that Tom Selleck did that's not named Magnum PI. Like that.
We interviewed him. You know, you guys do all these
something,
TV
the word, was the word blue in it? I want to say.
Blue chips? No.
No.
Blue bloods. Boom.
Yeah, I knew the word blue was in it. Yeah.
Nah, anyway.
I got you halfway there, Mark.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm mad at myself.
So nobody has watched more Texans football than you, Mark Vandermeer. It's impossible. You've called every game of every season in the history of the team. So while we're talking about these documentaries, I feel like you will have the most educated opinion on this. Which Texan season or seasons, if you think there are a couple candidates, would make for the best Last Dance type documentary, you know, multi-episode.
Right.
Obviously, you'd have the biggest audience here in Houston, but just if you were trying to put something together that you would pitch to not just people watching in Houston, but maybe everywhere that you could think could turn into a really good episodic story, sad or happy, which seasons do you think are most Last Dance friendly?
Do you want happy first or sad first?
You do whichever order you want to do them in.
All right, let's do happy first because I'm in a happy mood. It's Friday. Everybody's happy. All right, so happy would be, all right, you started off in 2010, and I know you did your thing with Arian Foster's breakout game and all that in 2010 season opener against the Colts. 2010 is a weird season because they start 4-2, right? Yeah. And then D'Amico Ryans goes down in week 6, and that's a game they won against the Kansas City Chiefs. And there they are. They're 4-2, and you're thinking 4-2. All right, they were 9-7 the year before. This is the year, right? But then things start to slide out of control, and you have those catastrophic losses. You have the Jets' last second loss, the one of the Chargers where they're rolling and at the end, and they couldn't keep a drive going. They have the Jacksonville Hail Mary. They have the Baltimore Ravens pick 6 in overtime after they scored 16 consecutive points to send it into OT. You have all those bizarre losses down the stretch. You have the game they won against Rusty Smith and the Titans where you have Courtland Finnegan. You have all that, all right? All that's in the doc, but we're sliding out of control, and Kubiak, they are calling for his head. People forget, people in this town wanted him fired. He's got to be gone now. They went 9-7. We waited a long time for this. 2010, they're 5-10. They're dead. They're done. Get rid of Kubiak. Sports Radio 610 is in the documentary because there is a Bum Phillips roast and toast at the Improv, and Wade Phillips shows up. And I get to introduce Wade Phillips. I think I did. But anyway, Wade Phillips gets a standing ovation. Wade Phillips just got fired from the Cowboys after their horrible start that year. And I was emceeing the thing. And when Wade sat down, I said, "You've been in the wrong town." Right? Oh. Because he was in Dallas. Yeah. Now he's, and it was, I like that line. That's why I just said that. And it really, you know, people were like, "Ooh," like everyone wanted Wade to be either the coach or the coordinator, but they wanted Kubiak fired still. So the last week of practice, I'm there at the Houston Methodist Training Center practice bubble, and we think Kubiak's probably gone, and Bum Phillips walks through the door with Dan Pastorini. Bum Phillips. And you're thinking, Gary's not getting fired. And they have McNair with them. So McNair, Bum Phillips, Pastorini. I think Cal might have been there too. And I was like, Gary's not going anywhere. Guess who's going to be the defensive coordinator?
Yeah.
So Wade becomes the coordinator. So you have all that meltdown, and now you have, okay, Wade's the coordinator. You have the lockout. You have Watt getting drafted, the seedlings of Watt's career. You have Jonathan Joseph and Daniel Manning signing free agency. A wild night that was. And then you have the 2011 season with all the crap that happened there with all the quarterbacks and everything, and 18 quarterbacks in the room by the end of the year, including Jeff Garcia and Kellen Clemens and
wild.
Jake Delhomme and all those guys. And that's it. So it's kind of a happy ending, the first playoff win. So that's my 9-part or 10-part episodic series.
I feel like you've written the whole thing.
Yes.
You know, sorry about the long answer.
That's okay. You just storyboarded the whole thing. That was great.
You would have to spend at least a good 3 minutes on that roast of Bum Phillips because that was one of the all-time. John Wessling was when, but oh, it yeah. seemed like Bum was doing okay with everything. But then John Wessling went in on Wade Phillips,
an actual comedian.
It looked like Bum was going to like come up and choke the life out of John Wessling. Bum was giving this look like, "What in tarnation are you saying about my boy?" And Wessling can sense it. It's awesome. It's on you. I'll tweet this out later. I was just looking at the YouTube. Mark, you make an appearance at the beginning. You're introducing John Wessling. You're wearing a blazer that looks every bit as large and baggy as anything Michael Jordan wore in The Last Dance.
That was a style at the time.
I hadn't caught up yet. It was 2010. Look, no, I emceed the whole thing that night. I emceed the whole thing, but everybody did so well. You know, we all went for it that night to bring, you know, Sports Radio 610 into another echelon of events, and that was Gavin Spittle as the program director. That was a very cool time because that was the first one of the roast and toasts we did.
All right, so Mark, that was the happy version of it. I think we can agree on what the sad version of a 9-part docuseries would be for the Texans. There's a few seasons, obviously. Mm-hmm. Seth played in one of them in 2005. Yeah. To me, and maybe it's because I was here for this one, I was living in Chicago at the time when 2005 was going on, but I think I could storyboard the 2013 season the way you just did the 2010 one.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing about the 2005 season. If you're going to do a 9-part or 10-part series, why is Brady 9, by the way? Is it like...
I have no idea.
It should be a 6-part series, yeah. Brady 6. Yeah. Anyway, but 2005...
Oh, number of Super Bowls, I bet. Yeah, because he went to 9 Super Bowls.
You could have the, you know, Roger Carr, David Carr. Roger's no longer allowed to practice. Joe Pendry takes over as offensive coordinator. Palmer gets fired. You know, there were some decent expectations that season. You go 2-14, but you started off with the last game. Here's how the thing begins. New Year's Day, San Francisco, the Bush Bowl between the 49ers, Alex Smith starting at quarterback, and the Texans. David Carr, he goes out in the game. Banks plays okay until throwing an interception in overtime. Niners win the game. You win the number one pick in the draft. It's going to be Reggie Bush. A few days later, Vince Young wins the national championship in dramatic fashion. So you have that whole... We should draft Vince Young. No, we should draft Reggie Bush. Who the hell is Mario Williams? That whole drama plays out. You have the night before the draft. You have Mario getting drafted. I mean, I've left out the whole part of Kubiak getting fired. The Houston kid comes home to coach the team. So that could be one. But 2013, guys, if you want sheer meltdown, I mean, 2013, there's just nothing like it. And it would be a horror movie for me.
It would.
Slime season.
Yeah, Mark, I got the bullet points in front of me. Huge expectations coming into the year because you're 12-4. Huge.
Super Bowl. You went 12-4. You failed in the postseason. Now you got to get it right in January.
Schaub collapse.
Yeah.
Ed Reed. Case Keenum starting. And then it turned into a whole thing with Case and Matt going juggling back and forth. The Kubiak stroke during the right before halftime of the walking off the field at halftime of the Colts game.
Yep.
Andre Johnson walking off the field at the end of the Raider game because
Bearded Schaub. You had Bearded Schaub at the end of the season.
Bearded Schaub, who was DeAndre had a little social media faux pas that year that might be a deleted scene.
Well, that was attributed to him, but it wasn't actually his, according to him.
Okay. Well,
those were not his genitalia.
Hence a deleted scene. And then the whole period of Kubiak getting fired, that game in Jacksonville where DJ Swearinger was just out of control, and they get home and Kubiak's fired the next day, and then that all leading to Bill O'Brien getting hired here.
Look, the beginning of that year, you start 2-0. So you have the Monday night game, but the injuries too. Owen Daniels going out, Cushing getting hurt again in Kansas City. Arian getting hurt in Kansas City. The Kansas City 3 was part of that season.
I forgot about that.
That season, the whole thing just slides out of control. Everybody's fired. The Richard Sherman play, because you tweeted something about that recently, there was a post about it. And
it was one of the choices on the Pendergast Rewind.
That Seattle game, they were rolling in that game. They were doing really well in that game against the team that would ultimately go to the Super Bowl, right?
Win
the Super Bowl. You were rolling in that game. Everything, the world was right. Shot through a TD pass to Garrett Graham. Everything was good. And then Russell Wilson turns into Tarkenton Flutie, whatever he was, on that one drive where he converts a fourth down. They score. And then you have the Richard Sherman play.
Yeah.
The play that changed everyone's lives.
Yeah.
Because it really did. I mean, that one play... That was the play of the year in a very bad way, but that was the play of the year.
Yep.
I hate reliving this. Stop me.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's but you're the foremost authority on it, Mark. We got to take advantage of having you here on the show on these 8 o'clock hours.
You know what always bothered me about that play? It's the fact that, and this is why I like the O'Brien offense, and that if you're going to line up with and run a bootleg like that, you see Cam Chancellor like, oh, wait a minute, we have to change this play at the line of scrimmage. I don't have anyone. The quarterback should know. I have no one blocking Cam Chancellor.
Yeah.
He's coming, and I'm going to boot. And where is he going to go? I mean, he's not going. He's not dropping in coverage. He's coming right after me. So I'm going to have Cam Chancellor in my face while I'm trying to get the ball off to Owen Daniels or whoever else. So he bootlegs around. Chancellor's in his face. He throws up a lollipop. Sherman picks six. You had to check out of that play or just bang a timeout and say, let's call something else, coach. I need another play.
Yep. That's Mark Vandermeer, joins us in the 8 o'clock hour each and every week on Fridays. Mark, what's going on Texans All Access tonight?
Tonight we're going to have a little bootleg Tim Kelly and some other Friday fun stuff because it's Memorial Day, guys. Let's party.
Cool. And I'm on Texans 360 tomorrow night with Drew.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That is tomorrow night, 11 o'clock on ABC 13.
That's
Check it out.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So promote that as well. All right, good stuff. Right. Hey, Mark, we appreciate it. We'll see you next Friday.
Thanks, boys.
All right, there it is. Mark Vandermeer joining us for his weekly visit on the show as we head into the 9 o'clock hour here on Payne and Pendergast on Sports Radio 610. Yet another indicator that we could see some big changes defensively for the Texans. That's coming up next.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.